Good morning and welcome to each of you this morning. What a beautiful day the Lord has blessed us with. It's some beautiful fall weather out there this morning. In the last couple of weeks it's been like you can get out in the morning. It feels a little chill in the air, but you're not too cold by the end of the day. It's been some nice weather. Welcome to each one of you this morning. It's good to see that Elmer and Jacob have made it back. That's a blessing. We're happy to have both of you with us this morning, including some visitors and an old friend from Arkansas as well. So welcome to y'all. This morning I'd like to start with reading a story. It's found in the Old Testament in the book of Numbers. You're welcome to turn with me there to Numbers 21. And I'm going to jump around a little bit to complete this story. It's kind of spread out over a few different chapters. But the first portion I'd like to read is found in Numbers 21. And I'm going to start reading in verse 21. And Israel sent messengers unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through this land. We will not turn into the fields or into the vineyards. We will not drink of the waters of the well. But we will go along the king's highway until we be past thy built borders." And Sihon would not suffer Israel to pass through his border. Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel into the wilderness and came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. And Israel smote him with the edge of the sword and possessed his land from Arnon unto Jabbok, even unto the children of Ammon, for the border of the children of Ammon was strong. And Israel took all these cities, and Israel dwelt in all the cities of the Amorites in Heshbon, and all of the villages thereof. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab, and had taken all his land all out of his hand, even unto Arnon. I think we'll stop reading right there, and I'd like to jump ahead into the next chapter. You know, Israel had scored an impressive victory here. They had defeated the Amorites in a battle that was seemed very one-sided. It seemed very unlikely for them to have won. And that sort of sent shockwaves through the region. If we look ahead to the next chapter, like I said, in Numbers 22, we'll look at verses 1 through 3. And the children of Israel set forth and pitched in the plains of Moab on the side of Jordan by Jericho. And Balak the son of Zippor saw what Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was sore afraid of the people because they were many, and Moab was distressed because of the children of Israel. And so we see in these verses and in the verses following this that Moab realized that they were next. They were right up against their border, and they were afraid. They saw what God had done to the Amorites. And to Balak's credit, he was not the type of leader to just try the same thing over and over again, it didn't seem like. He thought, well, let me try something a little bit different. And he set out to protect his people and to deal with this problem. And the way he did it was he sent forth messengers to Balaam, who was a soothsayer, a witch doctor. I'm not sure what we would call him today, but it was someone that he called upon to bring down a curse on the children of Israel. And we know the story that as Balaam came to the king, he was met by the angel of the Lord who set about to slay him, but his donkey prevented that from happening. And over that course, the angel of the Lord instructed Balaam not to curse the children of Israel, but rather to bless them. But it's not the end of the story here, and I'd like to jump ahead again a little bit onto Numbers 25. And I don't know how close these scriptures happen together. If you read these from Numbers 22 through Numbers 25, it would appear like it happened in a relatively short amount of time. And I think it did, and so I don't have time to read the whole entire portion today. That's why I'm kind of jumping around a little bit. But if we go ahead to Numbers 25, let's just read verses 1 through 9 here. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat and bow down to their gods. And Israel joined himself unto Baal-peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, take the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye every one of his men that were joined unto Baal-peor. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianite woman in the midst of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. And those that had died in the plague were 24,000. And this is amazing to me. Shortly after a victory over the Amorites, the children of Israel found themselves dying in a plague. You know, they had nearly been defeated, not by a great army, but by their own undiscipline. And it was not a coincidence. It was carefully planned by the Moabites. In Numbers 31, we read who the culprit was. If we look at Numbers 31, verse 16, I'm just going to go ahead and jump there to read that. Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor, and there was a plague among the children, among the congregation of the Lord. So Balaam, I guess when he discovered that God wasn't going to allow him to curse the children of Israel, he counseled Balak and he said, but there is a way that we can take care of these Israelites. And it nearly worked. Had it not been for the courage of a man, it may have done a lot more damage. And I'd like to talk this morning just about the power of influence and how the mighty Jewish nation in this case went from nearly being destroyed, not by a great army, but by a people, a wicked people, whom they had embraced. You know, if you read the law that God gave to the children of Israel, you are able to see pretty soon that they had violated one of his principal commands. Over and over again, he warns against joining themselves or making covenants with the people around them. Deuteronomy 7, just for one instance, he says in verse 3 and 4, neither shall thou make marriages unto them. Thy daughter shall not, thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, and that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and he will destroy you suddenly. You know, when it seems like God's vision for his nation of Israel was to sort of protect his people from outside influences. And it was a matter of he wanted to have them conquer the land of Canaan and destroy the inhabitants there. And then any foreigners that wanted to assimilate, there was some expectations that were given for them. You see, when foreigners would come in, they were expected to do certain things to be allowed to live among them. And it's like God understood that if we allow these foreigners with their foreign gods into the midst, they would only corrupt them. And he wanted to protect them against that. And now that was in the Old Testament. And I'll get to the New Testament soon, because we do not have those same protections today. God has not provided us a nation, a country where all wickedness has been banished from us. We deal with that more on a constant basis. But it's just interesting how God's vision for his people was to protect them and to keep those influences outside. And as soon as they disobeyed and allowed those to come in, be it through marriage or through foreign or through covenants, through treaties and other interests, we begin to see problems every turn when that happens. But you know, influence is a power to shape one's thoughts and actions and feelings. And the danger of evil influences have been present in our lives ever since the Garden of Eden. Over the years, the vehicle has changed, but the goal has remained the same. It's to kill and to destroy. And we see that the Israelites, again, they had no problem defeating the army that was outside. But when it came inside among them, and it was something that was much more difficult for them to root out. You know, the commercial world has always been quick to spot new mediums for influence. I was reading, I heard the other day, and I can't quite believe this. Maybe you can, maybe it sounds more realistic, but they said the average American sees between 4,000 and 10,000 advertisements a day. And it can be everything from just the label on the Coke bottle to being a billboard to being something that you listening to a podcast and they slip in an advertisement here or there. But I always find it interesting. I do some marketing and sales at our business, and there are tricks to the trade. It's not that they're just throwing money out to the wind whenever they're looking to influence a person to buy a certain product. There's a lot of time and money invested into what works best. But I always find it interesting when I pick up a newspaper from even 100 years ago. The people back then had perfected the art of clickbait. It was long before clickbait was a thing, but it was like you'd be given 10 words or 15 words, and you read about these products, and it's like, wow, they made every word count. And it's, but in today's world, that commercial influence is just so much more prevalent. One of the biggest money makers today, and one of the biggest ways that products get to the market, is through social media, and especially through the influencers. Because what they've found is, companies have found, is that if you're willing to invest your time into somebody, if you're willing to watch a video that they produce, if you're willing to go through their content, you've already put a lot of trust in that individual. Because what can you invest that's worth more than your time? And so if they figured out that if they can get that person to promote a certain product, you're far more likely to buy it than even something you would see on a billboard. This last year, they said that, I read, approximately $24 billion was spent on influencer advertising, and they expect that number to reach $33 billion this year alone. So it's an industry that is growing so fast. You know, and many of the products that they peddle, they're actually inferior products, or sometimes they're outright scams. But again, it's hard for us to realize that when we have put so much trust into that individual already. And one of the most famous examples of that was several years ago, and you may have seen this, was a scam that was out there where a lot of social media content creators were promoting. And that was, you could buy this piece of land in Scotland, and you could would legally be allowed to change your name to a lord on legal documents, because in Scotland, I guess there's a thing that landowners were called lords there. And so this was a huge thing that was going on, and they had spent millions, maybe millions and millions of dollars on these promoters, and they got rich doing it. And supposedly what way it was set up is somebody had bought this big tract of land, and they'd cut it up into these little one-by-one plots, and you would say, well, I'll just sell you a one-by-one plot, and then you can call yourself either a lord or a lady, like the old Scottish tradition. And it was a year or two ago they discovered that was all a big scam. But You know, as I say the story, it's ridiculous. You think, well, this is ridiculous. If you've never heard it, well, who would ever buy this? But again, they've learned that if you trust someone with your time, you will probably trust them with your money as well. Take their word for it. And, you know, I don't want to get stuck on that. I also thought of how governments will use influencers to shape geopolitics. And there was one organization that, if you were in the news earlier this year, you know what I'm talking about. An organization called USAID. It was very prominent in the news for several weeks because it had become under increased scrutiny by members of the government, the new administration, as to, well, where is all this money going that we're giving them? And as it got in the news, a lot of people were like, well, why are we spending our money on these things that are clearly not for aid or for humanitarian purposes? You know, there was a lot of ridiculous things that were being spent on. And as they dug down further, they discovered what was going on was that the government was using that to project what they call soft power on countries, where they would try to influence elections and governments by fomenting unrest through the culture. And one case in particular where they were successful in enacting a regime change was when they spent a lot of money to pay certain music artists to write certain songs, and then they would pay the radio stations to promote the songs, and that kicked off civil unrest, discontent, and actually ended up with regime change over the years. And I just say all this because sometimes the influence that we're subjected to, we don't even realize what's behind it. You know, I sometimes ask myself, do I realize how dangerous the influences are that I allow into my consciousness? There's a news podcast I like to listen to or something like that, and I listen to that, get my news, or I listen to certain songs I enjoy, and it's like, well, if I'm not careful, how easy is it to start to allow ideas that maybe you don't agree with, but they're sort of presented every couple of days or every couple of weeks, and you start to sit on that? And are we conscious against fighting back against that? I think sometimes of what Andrew Fletcher wrote. He was a Scottish political activist and a poet. And one of his most famous sayings was, "Let me write the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." You know, he understood that controlling the culture was more important than controlling the rules, and if you wanted to really enact change, you needed to change the hearts and the minds of people rather than forcing them into little boxes. We saw that play out in front of our eyes several years ago when the Dobbs decision was brought down by the Supreme Court. And what the Dobbs decision was is it took away the protections of abortion and left it up to the states. And there were some states that went about passing laws that severely restricted abortion or even outright banned it. And I was one of the many people who thought this is a really good, who was very happy to see something like that passed. But only a year later, there was a very disturbing statistic that was starting to go around, and that was that the number of abortions actually went up since the Dobbs decision. And I think there's a lesson there for even for us as Christians. If we want to change the nation and we want to change the laws, changing the laws may not be the most effective way to go about it. And since then, I've been noticing a lot of billboards up on the road, and I don't know if you've seen them. Some of them are by CAM and some of them are other organizations that say heartbeat of 18 days or something like that. And other billboards that just remind people that this is actually a living being. I think hopefully we can get to start actually changing hearts and minds on this rather than just making laws, because that, as Andrew Fletcher would have so so well pointed out, let me write the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes the laws. If we control the culture, we will find a much more long-lasting effect. But it's not just us that needs to know that. We also need to know that the people that control the culture, unless we are willing to fight against the culture, we will likely get sucked into it as well. You know, our people have always done very well with being suspicious and shying away from cultural influences, especially ones that try to break apart the things that we value. When the television was invented, when the radio was invented, we didn't allow them in our homes. Most of our churches didn't. And even when the internet became mainstream, there was a lot of hesitancy to embrace that. And yet, as we've continued to go along, we find that like it's pretty hard to get anywhere without the internet. It's just it's become so in a part of our lives. But do we still fear it? And I hope that we haven't lost our fear of the world around us. It's become incumbent upon us to make our own decisions as to what we will allow ourselves to consume. Because if we follow our desires without any overriding principles, we will be consumed. And I think of the verse that Jesus said in Matthew 10, in verse 16. And I know this was mostly written as he was sending his disciples out as evangelists, but I do think it's appropriate for this occasion as well. And he says, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep among wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." It gives a picture of a very dangerous place to be. And you know, I have neighbors on both sides of me that have sheep, and they have spent a lot of money on their fences. And their fences, they built them not just to keep the sheep in. In fact, I think they could have probably done cheaper fence if all they had been worried about is keeping the sheep in, but it's also to keep the coyotes out. And several times I've gotten out of bed because my dog's barking, or sometimes on my way to work early in the mornings, I'll see a coyote probing the fence and trying to get into the sheep. And it seems like the fence has done its job quite well. But if you let the coyote loose in amongst the sheep, what's going to happen? The sheep are extremely vulnerable. And I think it's a really good picture, because we as Christians are very vulnerable to the world around us. Going back to what I said about in the Old Testament, God had set up provisions that his people wouldn't be able to receive influences from the wicked world that was around them. But he hasn't put those protections in place now. In fact, he says, "I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves, just so you know. You're going to be extremely vulnerable." You know, we are no longer protected in a nation where we'd be safe, but rather be sent among the wolves. And he said, as he went on to the verses after that, that they would be hated, they would be arrested, and they would even be put to death. I do find it interesting in that verse as well. He says to be wise as serpents. I don't know if you know what... I guess I should back up a little bit. I don't know what you think of when you think of snakes, of serpents. Most of us don't really like snakes all that well. I know I've sort of... I don't care to come across a snake. And I have spent a good bit of time outdoors and have observed snakes over the years. I've had quite a few encounters with them. One thing I've come to learn about snakes that I find is interesting is that they don't want to deal with you any more than you want to deal with them. In fact, they are a lot less interested in coming across a snake than you are of coming across one, as hard as that might be for you to believe. And we always see things from our perspective, and we see this snake, it's hiding in the grass, we can't see it, and if we step on it, it could bite us and send us to the hospital. And so, you know, when you can't see something, you're kind of afraid of it. But have you ever thought about it from a snake's perspective? How you as a human are just this giant that, I mean, if you step on his head, it's done. And so they are extremely vulnerable on the ground. And so they are very alert. And if you're walking through tall grass and you're afraid of snakes, the best thing you can do is make a lot of noise when you're walking. Even, you know, occasionally stomp your foot a little bit because they're very good at picking up vibrations. And they will get out of your way. 9 times out of 10, your snake encounter is not encountering a snake because it has gotten out of your way. And I think about that as, in this context, that Jesus, he said, be wise as serpents. Understand your vulnerabilities and flee from them. Don't approach them. Don't get too close. You're going to be a lot better off if you just avoid them in the first place. He also says to be harmless as doves, and doves are often used to represent purity and innocence. And I think that's the other side of this, is that not only are we to be wise, but we're also to be pure in dealing with the world around us. Because whenever we expose ourselves to evil influences, we make ourselves vulnerable. You know, being in the world, we cannot entirely avoid the wickedness that the world produces. You know, after all, we are sheep among wolves, but let us be careful not to expose ourselves unnecessarily. And, you know, I've talked about the power of influence in a negative way, and I could say a lot more about it. You know, we're bombarded with ads for products that we don't need. Our phones are designed to keep us on them as long as possible, and our social media algorithms are made to keep us interacting with them constantly. Even something as innocent as a grocery store is designed to squeeze the maximum profit out of us. You know, I don't know if you've ever thought about it, the milk and the eggs are always in the furthest part of the store, and there's a reason for that. They realize it's a product that you're going to get, even if you have to walk the whole way through the store to get it. So they think, well, maybe you could walk past all of the other things and see if there's anything else you can need. And that's why when my wife sends me after milk and eggs, I come back with a trunk full of groceries. But they've also figured out that if they can convince you to buy some vegetables or fruits, you're much more likely to buy junk food because you think, well, you feel good about yourself. Oh, I've bought some healthy food. Now I'm going to splurge a little bit. And that's why the fruits and vegetables are always at the front of the store. Well, they can get you to put that in the cart. And this is all things I've read about the way that psychologists have studied human behavior. And so once you know that, you'll probably never think about grocery shopping the same when you're frustrated that all the main ingredients are not all together. They're all spread out like a treasure hunt through the store. It's not because of a bad design. It's because they have figured out how to get you to spend more money there. But I don't want to leave this on a negative note. I don't want to just focus on this because we as Christians, we as God's people also have the power to influence in the world around us in a positive way. And I want to just share a story here, and I hope they don't mind me sharing this story because I did not ask them for permission. But it was such an inspirational story that I became aware of this summer. This was my wife's grandparents in Arkansas. They moved down to Arkansas about 60 years ago from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And Lancaster was very developed at that time compared to the rest of the country, and especially compared to Arkansas, because that part where they moved to was still back in the woods quite a bit, back in the mountains. And their house was very poorly insulated. I don't know if I kind of think maybe they didn't have running water. I could be wrong on that. But it was very, very, how would you say? Yeah. It felt like taking a step back in time, especially for someone like them. And they had to learn how to survive, especially that first winter, which was a very cold and brutal winter. And so Amos would go out and he would cut trees down to heat the house with. And after several weeks, his chainsaw blade began getting dull, and he decided to go talk to the neighbor about where he could get a new blade. And his neighbor man said, well, he said, you don't need to buy a new blade. I'll teach you how to sharpen the one that you have. And that was the beginning of a lifelong friendship. And so the neighbor had, they had three boys. Amos had four girls, and they were all very close to the same age. And they literally grew up together. And this last summer, the families had a reunion, and I had the privilege of being there. And I say this story because I think it was the oldest one of their boys was talking to me, and he got very emotional. He said, you have no idea what this family has done for us as a family. And he told me their story, and it was amazing. You know, they didn't grow up Christians. His dad really didn't want anything to do with church, wasn't interested in anything Christian or godly. His mom would go to church like on Easter or maybe on Christmas. But that was the kind of family they grew up with. And over the years, the two families got very close. And they would spend, almost every week, they would spend one or two evenings together playing card games or visiting, eating popcorn. The children, as soon as they get home from school, they would play together in the fields until dark nearly. And they got closer than some families. And years and years and years went by like this. And over the years, one by one, that family began to accept salvation. And today, even the father has accepted salvation. And it was such a blessing when I went there and I saw at the reunion, you know, there's grandchildren that are saved and they are married and they're raising families. And that's why this boy became emotional. When he talked about it, he said, it wouldn't be the same if it wouldn't have been for Amos's. You know, all because one family was faithful in just serving the Lord. And so I want to leave you with that story because we also have that power within us. We don't need to just be afraid of everything. Yes, we should be. We should be very careful with the influences we allow in our lives because those influences are meant to destroy us. Some of them are. They don't have our best interests in mind. And yet we as Christians also can influence the world around us, and we should not be afraid to use that power we have within us to share the gospel with our neighbors and our friends. You know, after all, 1 John 4, verse 4 says, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. And as Christians, we just get a hold of that. Just remember that we need to remain pure. We need to remain wise and alert. And yet, we can also use our stories and our families and our influence to impact those that are around us. So this time, if you'd like to kneel for prayer.